Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The 59th edition of the Great Rolex 24 of Daytona. Johnny Palmer and Jeremy Shaw in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, bringing you live coverage at IMSAradio.com. And if you head to the live video tab on IMSAradio.com, you can enjoy not only our dulcet tones, but also the visuals perfectly synced up. And the stellar work from Rooftop Ray, who is hard at work. It's a reduced crowd, but they have allowed Ray to be at the 24 Hours of Daytona. And we couldn't do this segment of the race without him providing great footage on IMSAradio.com of the GTLM battle right now, which involves Nick Tandy. He has the number one illuminated on the side of his number four Corvette. And, well, the adjustment from a Porsche to a Corvette seems to have been taken in the Bedfordshire man's stride, and I expected nothing less, really, Jeremy Shaw.
Equating Nick Tandy's name to a Corvette, I must admit, but he's settled in there really quickly, as you suggested. It means that he's a pretty good team player, is Nick, and he's settled in there right away. Both he and Alexander Sims, who's joined this team as well, two very good additions, I think, for Corvette Racing, and. The success for Corvette Racing, I think, is just going to continue this year. Certainly miss seeing Oliver Gavin not driving a Corvette, but it's certainly been great to see Oliver instead driving for the Vassar Sullivan Lexus team this weekend, and has had a goodly portion of this race in the lead of the class as well. The car he shares in this race with Jack Hawksworth and Aaron Tielitz has been they've had a really good run so far, and that car is currently in the second position and Carl Kirk was the fourth driver, number 14 car, currently running in second position behind, as you were saying a little while ago, Simon Mann, with just a dozen seconds between those two at the moment. And then Corey Lewis is right there in third place as well in the Lamborghini. And Johnny, you were saying earlier on about the different manufacturers involved there. Right now the order is Ferrari, Lexus, Lamborghini, Porsche and Mercedes. It's actually two Mercedes is in fifth and sixth. And then the best of the Aston Martins, which now has Ben Keating, who has, I think, probably completed his duties in the LMP2 car, perhaps, or certainly most of it, and is now taking the wheel of the TF Racing Aston Martin, and running in the seventh position in GTD. That's car number 97.
Yeah, I'm always mightily impressed with the various combinations that you get in the top five. But that's the beauty of GT Daytona, in the sense that we've got so many different manufacturers represented. Those that aren't featuring in the top six, for example, at the Turner Motorsport BMW, it would be great to have that one towards the top 10. It's 13th at the moment, so that's definitely within its grasp. And Aidan Reed piloting the 96 BMW. Also, the Acura that we're not mentioning a great deal about, but purely because it has had its struggles in the opening exchanges, but there is opportunity yet for things to improve for the Magnus with Archangel Acura being driven by Andy Lally. And then another manufacturer, the Audi R8 LMS of NTE Sport, and car 42 has JR Hildebrand at the wheel of that. So just a massive amount of manufacturers represented in GT Daytona, an example really of how strong GT3 is as a class, not only globally, but I think particularly so in this championship, the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, where so many there are other areas of motorsport where there's a number of chassis that you can choose from, but often teams will go with the obvious strongest one, sadly you get a sort of polarization of maybe two different favoured manufacturers. That's not the case in GT Daytona, because presumably they've got the balance of performance bang on right, and therefore you choose your weapon, you pay your money, you take your choice. And again, we have a very varied field, just as it has been for the last number of years in GT Daytona. So Ferrari leading by 11-odd seconds, but Aaron Tielitz with the opportunity to try and close that gap. It was Tielitz, by the way, getting ahead of Corey Lewis, posing that question a little while ago. But again, with thanks to Declan Brennan, who is paying close attention to GT Daytona this weekend, it was the Lexus getting ahead of the Lamborghini, but not really making that much of a break in second position as things stand. Hearing the Corvette number 3 in the background, and just pulling through the gears is Jordan Taylor, relaxing into another lengthy stint of 31, 32 laps there or thereabouts. He took over from Antonio Garcia at the start of this stint, so it's likely to be a double for Jordan, probably for 32 laps each. But as mentioned, the sister car of Nick Tandy, certainly in the hands of Tommy Milner, can go one lap longer than that. But we have had fortunes reversed, in the sense that we were wondering whether Tommy was able to get that extra fuel mileage because he was in the draft of the number 3. That's not the case in this stint, though. It's Tandy ahead of Taylor, so maybe we're in store for the number 3 car to get some of that mileage advantage back again. How's Jules Gounon doing in third position? Last time set a 145.8, which isn't the sort of speed that the Corvettes are doing. So if anything, that 15-second gap is growing, but only very slightly lap on lap. And the BMW of John Edwards last time was able to lap much quicker than the Ferrari. That was only 2 laps in isolation, I appreciate. But over 2 seconds gained there by John Edwards. And if that pattern continues to play out, we will have a scrap on our hands in the next few laps between Gounon and John Edwards. I was posing the question many, many hours ago now as to whether this might be the first race that Jules Gounon had competed in a Ferrari. Well, no, because don't need that long of a memory to recall 24 Hours of Le Mans 2019 when he was at the wheel of a Ferrari GTE car. We have a problem at the bus stop chicane with a Lexus stopped on the exit. It's on driver's left and dead stick there. We're going to go caution because of this. Now, is that Aaron Tielitz's car? No, it's the other machine. It's the 12, in fact, of Frankie Montecalvo. So down in 17th position, sadly, for this car. And another fire, Jeremy Shaw. Now, that is exactly where the exhaust is on one of these Lexus, I believe, right behind the front wheel. But I don't like the look of their flames licking there. And very sensibly indeed, Frankie's going to get out of that car before any more of it starts to go up.
Yeah, not sure whether that is a grass fire there or whether it is coming out of the car itself. But whatever it is, it certainly isn't good news. And it's been a troubled day for that number 12 team. They've had all sorts of problems during this race. They had some frontal damage early on. We saw the car, I think, ran off the road. I seem to remember going through the bus stop at one stage as well. So they're quite a long way off the pace, and looks like this might be the end of the day for them. But this is finally going to bring out another caution period then. But it's been, been a part of 3.5 hours, hasn't it, since we went back to green.
3 hours, 21 minutes and 54 seconds, to be exact. Mm. So, yes, very good portion of green.
6 full course caution.
So, what led up to this moment? There is a lick of flame anyway from the Lexus. Now, was this earlier on in the lap? That is definitely Lexus number 12, which didn't get anywhere close to the bus stop, Jeremy. It's actually arriving into the bus stop on the driver's left on the back straight. There's a massive amount of asphalt there, which serves as runoff if you get a monster crash on the back straight. But clearly, Frankie Montecalvo could sense a problem well before the turning point for the bus stop, because he is several car widths over to the left-hand side and touring its way towards the bus stop. And then he actually made its way back to the track just about before finally the car cried enough. But it looked like both exhausts were spitting flames. And the left bank has, as you say, just started to set fire to the grass, if anything. And Frankie, as he clambered out, just tried to put that out with his race boot, but didn't want to get too close to the fire in case it really took hold. But the marshals, very, very close indeed to the scene. The corner workers in their rescue unit got there quickly with the right fire extinguisher and eliminated the problem very quickly. So very little damage done, I would suggest, to the 12 by the fire. However, the damage may have already been done to the internals, and we'll only get to find out. Well, Vassar Sullivan will only get to find out when the car is returned to the garage. But, yeah, the door number will be somewhat scolded because of that. And thankfully, whether that was the spotter on the radio to Frankie Montecalvo or maybe some signals from nearby corner workers, the message got through to him to say best place is out of the car rather than inside trying to get it restarted. So a 19-car field may be down to 17 runners now, but otherwise attrition has not been high. It is, I'm pleased to say, in GT Daytona to this point. The GRT Grassa Racing Lamborghini Huracan no longer running. Franck Pereira last at the wheel of that. And now a problem for the Frankie Montecalvo, Robert McGinnis, Townsend Bell and Zach Veach. Bayshore-sponsored number 12 machine, the Lexus RCF GT3. 13 hours and 45 minutes still to go. That means 10 hours and 15 done. And it is coming up to 2 a.m. on the eastern seaboard of the U.S. in this historic venue of the Daytona Motor Speedway in Florida for the annual start to the year of the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, the biggest race of the year, certainly the longest, round one, which will deliver times 10 points year on year. No longer is it 35, which is actually what you got for getting pole position in last weekend's race, but 350 points on offer for this opening race proper of the season. Last week, this is an interesting debate, and maybe not the time to start it, Jeremy, but we did have a race last weekend, although for many, I think including yourself, not actually detailed as a race. Did the 31 achieve a race win last weekend?
I'm still waiting to hear on that one. I raised that question with IMSA last week, and they'll get back to me. Well, they haven't yet.
Okay.
So in my book, no, quite frankly. It wasn't a championship points-paying round. You did get championship points for scoring a pole position, admittedly, and that's why I posed the question. But for me, I don't think it does. It wasn't a full championship round, so no, I don't think it does count for a race win. The question is, what counts for the pole also? Do you get a pole for winning that race? I don't know. So, and how many drivers are credited with the pole position? So I've asked those questions, as I say. I haven't yet received a definitive answer from IMSA. I mean, it's IMSA's championship, so they can make the rules as they see fit, as it was the way I looked upon that one.
Well, it's not entirely, well, certainly not unknown to have more than one driver as a pole sitter, because the WEC, although they're going to be heading away from that system now, but for the past few years, we've had two drivers that needed to qualify the car. Without the two drivers, it wasn't qualified. But right. I agree, this is somewhat of a grey area last weekend. I mean, this is round one of the championship. The 24 Hours of Daytona is round one. And therefore, you would think at the end of this, we will have our first race winner of the season. But we also had a race last weekend to determine the grid. As you say, it's IMSA's say-so. So we'll await that email, and you can tell me what they say once it arrives.
Yes.
Just a couple of minutes away from the top of another clock hour. And as I say, it'll be the hour of 2 a.m. An hour and 40 away, therefore, from half distance. We're clearly far enough away from the previous caution for this to be the full dose of pit stops. It should be a relatively quick recovery, I would suggest, for the Lexus. All four wheels were pointing in the right direction. Obviously, going to be reasonably careful when they tow that car down beneath the double yellow line, though. making sure the fire is out, basically, and there's not any pesky flames still actually lit underneath the car as it moves. But I think predominantly that was coming from the exhaust, which sits a couple of inches above road level. So once that is out and the unburnt fuel is extinguished, they can safely move that car, I would hope, and it'll be straight to the garage then, where Vasa Sullivan can assess what they need to do, if it's worth doing it. I mean, you know, there are other drivers that clearly want to take part in this race, and well over half of it still to go, so it would be great if they could return to the race. It rather takes it out of contention. Not that it was particularly in contention prior to the incident, because it does seem like that side of the garage at Vasa Sullivan has had all the bad luck, and the 14 car, things are going very sweetly indeed, Jeremy.
That's exactly right, Johnny. Yeah, and you know, last year the number 14 car had a tremendous season. They ended up winning the Sprint Cup Championship for GTD, which is just the shorter races. And they were very much in contention to win the overall GTD Championship as well, until they just had, well, everything that could possibly go wrong, plus various other things as well from the last couple of races. So they just had a horrible end to the year, and ended up, I think, fourth in points rather than challenging for the lead. And quite a long way off the lead, but still was a great season. But this year they want to get it off on the right foot, and that the Vasa Sullivan Lexus team certainly came into Daytona with pretty high expectations. You know, they know their car is fast on all sorts of different types of tracks now. One of its Achilles' heels was always looking after its tyres, but they've improved that massively over the years, as we see pit stops now under caution for our race leaders.
Also noted, though, is that in the 28 car, Billy Johnson's come in for some emergency service for Allegra Motorsports, because it's not the turn of GT Daytona yet. It's the prototypes first, but that car has had to come in. It's been in the pits for a little while now, so does that suggest that actually Billy Johnson's gone behind the wall in his number 28 Mercedes? You're only allowed, is it one tyre to be changed if you feel that that's punctured, but either slowly or more rapidly, and you're allowed 5 seconds of the fuel nozzle to be attached if you're short on fuel, just to get you those extra few miles to the window where the pit lane is open. But that 28 car is still in the pit, so there's a concern there, as five of the six DPIs that at the sharp end of this race come in. The one that didn't was Harry Tinknell, the Mazda number 55, but otherwise K-Magin in 0-1, and Plar and Albuquerque and Pagino and Conway all down pit road, Jeremy Shaw.
Yeah, and the reason for that is that the number 55 car was lapped down, has been for a long, long time. And by staying out now, they will move ahead of all these cars that are now pitted, as they're all lined up behind the safety car. Then, before we go back to green, those cars are trapped in between the safety car and the class leader, i.e. in this case the overall leader, will be allowed to go past the safety car and run around to the back of the pack. And while he's running around to the back of the pack, then is the time for the 55 car to make its pit stop, get out again before the rest of the pack comes around, and hey presto, it's back on the lead lap and back in the race. The team had an opportunity to do that several hours ago, but there was a miscommunication between the pit wall and the driver, and he came in a lap too soon. So since then, they've remained that one lap down. But this finally now will give an opportunity to get back onto the lead lap and back in the mix again.
We're obviously at the point in the race as well, Jeremy, that teams feeling the need for a brake change, because that was being done on the 48 car, I believe, or was it the 60? It was definitely a Cadillac that was having brakes changed. So the Ally Cadillac racing machine, I believe, was having at least front brakes done. It's still on pit road, having that work done. And, yeah, it is definitely the Ally car. So front brakes, quite possibly rears as well. So this is going to be a longer stop because of that, but it's work that obviously the team needed to do at some stage. And even though we're an hour and 40 away from half distance, they're clearly happy to do it slightly earlier rather than later. The 28 car's still in pit road. Oh, and finally has rejoined now with Maximilian Buch at the wheel for Allegra Motorsport. So they've done a driver change as well. You can't do that, can you, during the phase of this stage of pit stops, because we're not at the point where GT Daytona can legally pit. And Aaron Tielitz from second place has already come in as well in the 14 car before everybody else in GT. So one or two having to stop well out of the window here as now the flood of GT LM cars reach pit road, led by the class leader Nick Tandy. Right on his tail is his teammate Jordan Taylor, and Jules Gounon, John Edwards and Bruno Spengler will all trigger the pit entry loop, as does the man-driven AF Corsa, the Kern-driven Pfaff Motorsport Porsche, the Corey Lewis, Paul Miller Racing, Lamborghini Huracan, and everybody else pretty much in GT Daytona as well. But definitely firm question marks alongside the name of Aaron Tielitz in his 14 Lexus, Jeremy, and the 28 car that have just done a driver change.
Was that a question?
It was more of a... What is the 28
sounds like
up
a statement.
To,
I wasn't, I didn't hear the question.
Well, it's about... I'm concerned about 28. Why are they doing a driver change well before the GT Daytona window opens? You can do emergency service,
yes.
But
you can do,
Billy Johnson's handed over to Maxi Boog, and I'm confused as to why. Well, Boog's back in the pit lane now. Now, is that to serve a penalty straight away? Or is it to come in to do more of a pit stop? I don't know. There's something awry with Allegra Motorsports, and the likewise for Aaron Tielitz, who should not have pitted at the point that he did. He came in from second place, a lap before everybody else in GT Daytona. And that's put him... We were talking about all the bad luck being soaked up by the 12 Lexus. I'm afraid the 14 is about to get a dose of it as well.
Well, was that for emergency service? Did he just
quite
take
possibly,
on
but it's taken too long. I don't think this is another pit stop for Tielitz. I think this is still the first one. And you would have expected Tielitz to have rejoined at this stage. So, there are, as I say, question marks next to Allegra Motorsports and Vassar Sullivan. They may have been forced into this, and we don't know the full detail as yet. This is obviously an opportunity for lots of teams to do breaks, by the way, because the 25 BMW is having its certainly pads changed, and quite possibly rotors as well. You would do the two at the same time, you feel, because pads and rotors, discs in Europe are matched, and are matched at the start of the week. Joe Bradley, who's been hunting around for drivers that are awake at this time of night, probably hitting a little bit of a dead end there. So Joe's going to be rejoining us in a moment for some VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock reports. But first of all, I think Jeremy Shaw had a quick thought for us as we continue this caution.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to find out what happened to the number 14 car. But just looking at the positions there, really... The number 60 car got out slightly ahead of the number 31 during this round of pit stops, primarily because he would have needed less fuel. The number 60 car on the last round of pit stops came in seven laps later than the number 31 car. Remember, the 31 car has been off sequence for quite a long time. So that shorter pit stop has enabled Olivier Pla to move ahead of Mike Conway. And then behind both of them now is the number 48 car with Simon Pagenaud still aboard. That car, of course, has just made that complete brake change, so that's fine. You know, it brakes are marginal on these cars, so it certainly makes sense to take the opportunity as full course caution, get that brake change done. You can do it without losing a lap, which is mighty impressive. You certainly couldn't do that in the old days. And get back out there, and he's lost a position or two, a couple of positions, but that's about it. So, good strategy, I think, from that team. And the number 55 car has not yet stopped because they haven't yet done the final pass around, but that car should come into the pit shortly just for hopefully routine service and be back on the lead lap. But it's still Kevin Magnussen that will lead under this caution period for Ganassi Racing.
We're almost 10 and a half hours in now to the 59th running of the Rolex 24 at Daytona. You'll tune to RS2 IMSA Radio, and this is the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre with Jeremy Shaw and Johnny Palmer, and providing VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock reports. Joe Bradley. Obviously, teams, Joe, have thought we'll have to do brakes at some stage, and this caution is as good a time as any, roughly half distance.
Yeah, absolutely, Johnny. It's ideal time to soak up the time that it takes to change brake rotors sometime during this race and during what looks like to be a relatively lengthy caution period. That's the perfect time to do it. It's quite simple, isn't it? As the cars tootle round the track, whilst your car is static on the pit lane, you're losing less track time. So this is what the teams have been looking to do, and now pretty much spot on. It's just past 2 a.m. in the morning, and now would be as good a time as any to do that. We will continue to try and get some BP Fuels driver interviews as we go through the night, but now that we're into the night, drivers, it's a very straightforward process. When drivers get out the cars, they very, very quickly need to get their head down and get some shut-eye, because they're on limited sleep like we all are, and they'll be very quickly getting their, you know, taking on a few more hydration drinks, a little bit to eat, a massage to get those stiff muscles, having just been in the tight confines of a race car. Even the GT cars are a bit of a squeeze for some people. They'll get a massage and then they'll get to bed as quickly as possible. And then, if we can, we'll squeeze in a bit of a chat to us to get some insight, and we'll continue to try and get some drivers to talk to, Johnny.
Yeah, sounds like a plan to me. This period almost certainly reserved for rest, because we're 10 past 2 in the morning now, local. An hour and a half away from the half-distance mark. Drivers that aren't necessarily scheduled for a drive in the early hours of the... Well, later on this morning, will be rising for breakfast anyway to just try and get a little bit of pattern back to their day. But if you're lucky enough to have the night off, or a few hours off in the night, they'll be back in the motorhomes now enjoying that. Battle for the race lead around the outside as we go back to green. It's two abreast for the first couple of cars, and for third and fourth as well. And there is a lead change there, as Philippe Albuquerque wasted no time at all going around the outside of Kevin Magnussen. Welcome to the Rolex 24 at Daytona, K-Mag. But he's on the fight bag, isn't he? On the way out of the right-hander at the International Horseshoe. Albuquerque just about with the lead. And I don't think Kevin Magnussen was going to try anything risky up the inside of that little kink. And now he's in danger of losing second position, this time to Simon Pagenaud, who is no slouch at restarts. Pagenaud has already got ahead of Olivier Pla, who is right on their tail in his Acura. So all change in the top five positions, pretty much. Pipa Durrani is also taking a watching brief in the 31 car for the Whelan Engineering Racing crew, desperate to try and get a bit more tyre temperature into their Michelin tyres. All five cars showing hints of a little bit of a zigzag through Speedway Turn 2. But a great restart from Philippe Albuquerque. He wasn't going to be asked twice to pull off that manoeuvre round the outside, which then gave him the inside line for the second element at 2A and darts in front of Kevin Magnussen. So Albuquerque, Magnussen, Pagenaud, Pla and Durrani is your new order in DPI. Harry Tinknell, though, to the pits. And was that the wrong side of the caution? We talked about Tinknell wanting that lap back, quite obviously, as the battling continues down into turns one and two. Kevin Magnussen not quite getting up to speed as quickly as those cars behind him. He's being hassled and harangued by Simon Pagenaud, whose front brake rotors are glowing red hot as they charge their way into the International Horseshoe. There is a Ferrari, the 62 Ricci Competizione Ferrari, to nip by now. And the all-important thing is, can you get ahead just before the kink, or just after the kink at turn four? Some of these DPIs did that, others had to bide their time, and that will drive a bit of a wedge between these five leading DPI cars. We'll head to Joe Bradley for a VP Racing update, Racing Fuels update, and then to Jeremy Shaw straight afterwards. Joe, first.
I just wanted to add to what you were saying there, Johnny. It looked to me as though Magnussen's tyres just hadn't quite switched on. Albuquerque's tyres very much so had. and just look at that lead that he's extended to seven tenths there across the line. And you could see the way Albuquerque's car was so neutral in the corner, whereas Kmag, he was fighting it all the way. So now we'll see that the 01, the Cadillac Chip Ganassi racing car, we'll see those tyres coming on now, and we'll see that car settling down. But isn't it fantastic with what, 13 and a half hours to go in this race, and these guys are still racing off a yellow into a green as if it's a 10 lap sprint? That's what this race is all about.
And that's the beauty, Jeremy, of this type of racing. You get a safety car, you get a caution, everything concertinas up, and the race is more or less reset.
Brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant, yeah. And we've had all sorts of changes of position here. We've got Scott Andrews, who's taken over the wheel of the number 74 car. He has just moved past Moritz Kranz into the lead of LMP3. That's 18th overall. More significantly, though, by a long way in the overall lead, the overall battle, Harry Tinknell came in, as I suggested, after getting the wave around to make his pit stop. He should have been back on the lead lap. However, a problem with the tail section on that car has cost them a lot of ground, and they're now, I think, three laps behind. I think Tinkley's back underway again, but that pit stop, 6 minutes and 50 seconds that lap, so better part of a well over 5 minute pit stop. That is very, very costly. Really bad luck for the Mazda team. I mean, it looks finally like they were going to get back right into contention. Not the case, unfortunately. Also, join that pit stop sequence, number 31 car came back in again right before we went back to green. Not quite sure why, because I think, pretty sure he came in with everybody else. It was great timing from number 31 car. So he was just about due for a pit stop in any case before that caution period, but not quite sure what happened to force the team to bring him in once again before they went back to green flag racing.
Okay, I get the feeling that there's quite a lot that's happened over the last caution, which was nearly 20 minutes, and now into the green as well. Could entirely see what the 55's aim was out of that, to get the lap back again, but they didn't bank on the issue with the rear deck, which then had to be addressed. And really up against it now. Another recovery drive required for Harry Tinknell. He stayed ahead of all the LMP2s, so that's something. But as Jeremy says, three laps down from Philippe Albuquerque, and in fact everybody else in DPI, or certainly in DPI contention. We do still have Tristan Vautier in the race, incidentally. And if you're enjoying not only our coverage on radio, but also via imsaradio.com, clicking on the live video tab, you'll be able to see the visuals as well, perfectly synced with our commentary. And the guy with the rear deck just wants to put that back on the car, but there are complications with two mechanics with head torches on, three mechanics actually, with the head torches trying to sort out the issue there. Joe, what is on that point of the car that needed so much work? Was it just the fact that it wouldn't attach properly, that rear deck?
Well, it might have been, Johnny, that they had to get the wiring connections for the rear lights. So as that rear wing deck goes on, it attaches to the rear of the car, which is basically the bodywork that covers the engine. But it's not just a case of clipping that on. Within that process, you have to, the wires will be dangling, and there'll be connectors there that you have to wiring loom for the rear lights to the main wiring loom on the car. And I think that was the fiddly aspect. It may have been that they got some kind of aero figures on the from the telemetry to say that the deck wasn't on quite right, but I would think more, let's not overthink this. I think that's probably to do with the lights.
Yeah, well, they're working now, which is the crucial thing, but it's cost them three laps, as we say. Jeremy, some questions about the 14 car as well, and at what point during the caution that car came down pit road with Aaron Tielitz at the wheel. He was in second at the time. So what do you know about the Vassar Sullivan entry?
Well, it's now Carl Kirkwood at the wheel of that car, but there was a water system problem, is what it described. That's helpful, isn't it? Not sure what a water system problem means, but that's what I've been told. So that car, unfortunately, now finds itself four or five laps, behind the race leaders in GTD. So what was looking super promising for the Lexus team in the space of, the number 12 car already had problems, but it was that car that caused this latest full course caution, and now the sister car has had a problem during a full course caution and has gone quite a way away from the lead lap. So a new race leader again now in GTD. That would be Michael Grenier in car number 75 for Sun Energy One. That team has been kind of flying below the radar screen. They've done a really nice job all the way through this race so far. 10 hours and 38 minutes into the race, so still almost an hour and a half away from the half distance point. But it's the Sun Energy One team that leads at the moment. Meanwhile, in LMP3, Scott Andrews has taken the lead. I think I might have mentioned that. He took the lead from Moritz Kranz at the restart, so number 74 ahead of the number 6 by just a few seconds. And the number 33 car, that's the Sean Creech Motorsports entry. Wayne Boyd now driving that car. It's three laps down, having made a long pit stop during that caution period. I would assume the team took the opportunity to change the brakes. They had all of the LMP3 cars, because the brakes were known to be marginal on these cars, they have to make a mandatory 8-minute stop at some stage, any stage during the race, to change the brakes on their cars. So we've seen several other teams do that, and I'm pretty sure that's what the Sean Creech boys just did to the number 33 car. So it's still running in third position in amongst the GTD traffic at the moment, but that stop is now done. And this is pretty close to the halfway point in a race, so assuming the cars can make it with just one brake change through the race, job done for Sean Creech Motorsports.
Yeah, and now with the stellar talent of Ulsterman Wayne Boyd at the wheel of the 33, he was European Le Mans Series champion in 2020, and I think just about took every pole position in that particular championship, the LMP3 part of ELMS for United Autosports last year. So great that he can get experience of the Daytona International Speedway once again. Was here, I assume it was here, with Sean Creech Motorsport last year. Yes, it was, at the 2020 running, and indeed part of this race in 2019 as well. No, didn't do Daytona, did do the Atlanta race, though, in a Ligier JSP3, in fact. So getting steadily more and more experienced in the USA. That was a real talent in Formula Ford in the mid to late noughties. In fact, UK Formula Ford champion in 2008. I think he won the festival that year as well. So Wayne Boyd back on track after he had a couple of barren years, I suppose, in the early 2010s. Although, interestingly, that 33 car has just come back into the pit lane. So maybe there's something not quite right with that machine. I'd also extend that thought to the number 28 car of Maxi Boog, who's been in and out one, two, three times now during this stint. It was all going nicely for the previous driver in the 28 car, which I'll remind you is the Allegra Motorsports Mercedes. So we had a stint in that car for Billy Johnson, which was 32 laps. That was bang on the money. But then Billy had to pit during the caution when it wasn't the time for GT Daytona cars to make their stops. He handed to Maxi Boog in what could have only been an emergency service pit stop. So I guess on the very next lap when Maxi Boog came in, that would have been a drive-through penalty for breaching the regulations. But then five laps later, Boog came in again and has since remained out. But something not quite right with the 28 car, and also the 33. Well, was that just in and out? Maybe a penalty for that car as well. Yes, here we go. Servicing the car from behind the wall, and the 33 is assessed a drive-through penalty as a result. That car staying in third position, but has let a few more GT Daytona cars through as well, including Ian James, Lars Kern, Ben Keating. Should make relatively quick work of those cars, although, as we've said, the performance of an LMP3 car, very strong in the corners, not so strong when you're relying on the mechanical grip, when a GT car can easily match its speed. And that's something that everyone's got has got to get used to pretty quickly in the first Rolex to include LMP3 cars. And I still feel like we're in that adjustment period even now, this deep into the weekend. 57 car of Maro Engel leading GT Daytona. It was a number of hours ago, Jeremy, when Indy Doncha was piloting this car to the lead of the class. So Windward Racing are back there again in 57.
They are. It's been a really good run for that team. So, yes, the number 57 now ahead of the number 75. Simon Mann, he's doing a nice job, isn't he? The young Englishman at the wheel of that number 21 Ferrari in third position, still ahead of the Aston Martin of Ian James. Heart of Racing car number 23 in fourth position. And Lars Kern in the plaid Porsche, the Pfaff Motorsports machine, in the fifth position, car number 9. And then Ben Keating in the Aston Martin for TF Racing. Those are the top six in GTD. Just had an update on the Mazda problem from Larry Holt. Thank you very much, Larry. He was he's the main man at Multimatic Motorsports. And they had to change the tail, I think, as you suggested, Johnny and or Joe, due to a problem with the lights. But when they went to change the tail, they broke a mounting pin. So the tail wouldn't go back on again or wouldn't stay on again. So they had to fix that. The car back is out again now, though. And as I say, you know, they're still not even halfway through the race. So three laps out, be off the lead at this stage is certainly not the end of the world.
No, might feel like it at this stage, yeah. But it's important.
After all that hard work.
Well, yeah, and it's not much reward, frankly, for redressing the balance. You're a lap down for a long, long time. Think, oh, brilliant, we can get the lap back now and be on the lead one. And then immediately afterwards you lose a further three. It is literally gain one step and three steps back again. But, you know, just as quickly as you gain one lap, you only need a few more cautions in the second half of the race and it can swing back in your favour very, very quickly. I'm sure cars have come from further back than that to score podiums in this race. So, definitely all not lost at the moment. And important just not to get distracted. You've just got to focus on the stint in hand right now.
Absolutely right, Johnny Palmer. And you know, in LMP3, the number six car from Mueller Motorsports America, that was four laps down at the end of the first hour and then came back to lead. You know, for a goodly portion, it's now in second place behind Scott Andrews, number 74 for Riley Motorsports. But you know, even in less than half the race, the number six car made up four laps on the rest of the field in LMP3. So, yeah, very much so, it can be done.
And Joe,
super battle for the lead, though. We've got the top. Well, actually, just on this lap, Albuquerque has managed to pull out a little bit, but it was four cars in a train there. Albuquerque, Magnussen, Simon Pagenaud and Pipo Durrani, so the Acura and then three Cadillacs all running nose to tail, and with Oliver Pla only another couple of seconds back in the fifth position.
I suppose it's very easy to run away, Joe Bradley, with what's happening in your race right at this moment, but you may at times have a 3-minute lead. You can't even start to think that you've got the race won at that stage, and likewise if you're three laps down you can't think, well, we're done for the whole of the day, because motor racing just has this this pattern, this rhythm, this habit of giving one moment and then taking away the other, or vice versa. So it's just about concentrating on the stint in hand and trying to get as good a lap times out of it as you can.
And absolutely, Johnny, and the distinction between a good team and a great team is just how they react to the kind of adversity we saw there that befell the number 55 Mazda there. Three laps down, 13 hours left. You've got to keep pushing, because who's to say that the car's ahead of you? And this is what you've got to keep open. You've got to keep pushing and pushing and hope that some kind of bad luck will befall the cars in front of you. The thing about this series is the cars are so optimized in this race. And we saw that at the last restart. We saw Albuquerque go at Magnussen and round the outside into turn one at the restart. And you think, hang on a minute, mate. Why, did you not get the memo? There's still, you know, there was still 13 and a half hours left. But it's such a competitive race that times like that, where you can make up time and just look at that, he's got a 3-second lead now over Magnussen in second. And that, for me, just tells you the kind of character of the Daytona 24 hours, when really you have to be pushing all the way for the whole 24-hour duration. It's incredible.
And I suppose experience at those restarts is massive. And Kevin Magnussen will obviously have experience of that from F1 days and from further down in the single-seater ladder. But I don't think they're ever quite as intense as you get them here at Daytona, where there's not an inch given or taken away. And it's also about the moment that you hit the throttle coming out of turn four, you have to be careful not to have crossed the line before, but not to have crossed, overtaken the car alongside you before you get to the solid white line. But it's knowing about the little intricacies about this track, which Philippe Albuquerque, you know, has researched year on year. And he knew where to put the car at the restart, which was on the outside of the 0-1, which would then automatically give him the inside as they go through the kink just before the International Horseshoe. So it's that track knowledge, I think, which is so key to this event. And Kevin Magnussen will have learnt a thing or two from that restart. I'm sure about that. He's running in second position, just 3 seconds away from Philippe Albuquerque. So there's no question about some solid pace from the day. Last time, though, he did lose around about half a second as Albuquerque heads across the line to complete 360 laps. Meanwhile, in LMP2, Giorgio Cernaciotto in the Dallara, currently outpacing all the Oricas. I have to say, I didn't see that coming at the start of the event. Dallara, in ACO rules racing, has generally struggled versus the Orica, but I suppose a little bit of favourable pit stop paree for the strategists at Cetelar Racing. And car 47 out front by nearly 25 seconds from four Oricas behind. Jeremy Shaw, you were about to make a point, I think, about DPI.
Yeah, a couple of things. The change of lead at the restart was the 33rd lead change in this race, by my reckoning. Got now the 10 car out in front. The other thing I was going to say is that, yeah, you're right, LMP2, Giorgio Cernaciotto, who's got a lot of experience in these cars, of course, has edged out a little bit over Stephen Thomas in second position. But, you know, he's brand new to this sport. You know, he's only been racing for a year. His first race was just over a year ago, literally. In third position, John Ferrano. Well, he's been around the sport a long, long time. He's hanging in there in the third position. Eric Lux is just a couple of laps back in the fourth. And he's having he's actually pulled away from Dwight Merriman over the course of the last, since the restart. But yeah, it's a super battle going on there. GTLM's, yeah, no change there. It's still mighty, mighty close. But what's interesting to me is in LMP3, the number 74 car, Scott Andrews, is most definitely edging away now from Moritz Kranz. The gap is out to 11 seconds between the first two in LMP3.
Yeah, Ferrano getting more and more used to LMP2 machinery. He had been a champion in 2018 in P3 when he won that with RLR M Sport in Europe, but then moved up to LMP2 level in the 24 Hours of Le Mans. That must have been the 2019 version. There were actually two Le Mans in that particular season, but RLR Sport / Tower Events was the entry then. What has become Tower Motorsport. So running here at Daytona in LMP2 last year. And that was his first Daytona, I reckon, for John Ferrano. So back again to attack this great race. And a year's worth of experience paying dividends right now. Some very varied colours on the Ferris wheel on the infield right next to Lake Lloyd. again providing that iconic shot of nighttime Daytona. With thanks once again to Rooftop Ray doing a brilliant job. If you've not yet headed to imsaradio.com for the video feed of this event with our audio synced perfectly, you can do that very easily. imsaradio.com, and at the top of the page, top left, it says live video. Click on that, and if you're outside of the US, you should be fine to get both audio and video perfectly synced. Good battle out on track now in the DPI category is the second and third place scrap for Kevin Magnussen and Simon Pagenaud, both in Cadillac DPIs. It's caddies second, third and fourth currently, and they are absolutely together now on the run towards turn five, the West Horseshoe. They're going to have to go on the high side of the Risi Competizione Ferrari, but no opportunity to overtake Jules Gounon there. They will, or at least one of these DPIs will get that move done into turn six. And the Ferrari, who obviously has to go through the corner at the same time, trying its best to stay out of the way. A little bit of a draft picked up there by Pipo Dirani, mightily experienced around this place. He just ducked into the tail of the prancing horse briefly and then jinked out of it to go to the low side to deposit Jules Gounon. And Pipo Dirani has gained yet more crucial inches on the car driven by Simon Pagenaud for Ally Cadillac Racing. So it's all about that battle really at the moment between Kevin Magnussen, Simon Pagenaud, Pipo Dirani, and 6 seconds away, Olivier Pla in the number 60 Meyershank Racing Acura. These three cars scrapping for second, third and fourth, not exactly slowing one another up, but what they can't offer is the same sort of speed as our race leading Portuguese Philippe Albuquerque, having taken the lead at the last restart, and that was now 25 minutes ago, has built himself, well, only 2.5 seconds. It's been slightly larger than that on occasion, but every credit to Magnussen, Pagenaud and Dirani. Not only are they duking it out for race position, but they're also just about keeping pace with the race leader. Most impressive, particularly for Kevin Magnussen, driving for the first time with a roof over his head. Yes, he's used to downforce, but he doesn't know this track so well, and he certainly doesn't know this type of car either, but he has adjusted to it like a duck to water. And maybe that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise when you consider his father is one Jan Magnussen. So he's kind of been around this type of racing since he was knee-high to a grasshopper, but it's one thing observing and another thing actually getting on board a car and taking active part. Down the inside there into the bus stop goes Philippe Albuquerque. A couple of gear shifts to locate third, probably third, and then out at the bus stop and powering its way into Speedway turn three. 2.5 seconds is pretty stable at the moment though, Jeremy Shaw. First back to second, third and fourth.
Yeah, it is. It's just stabilised nicely. I don't think anybody is pushing terribly hard in this stage of the race, but they are doing in without too much traffic. They're doing mid-36s, which is a really, really good pace. They're not hanging around by any stretch of the imagination. And for Magnussen, look, he's loving driving these cars. I'm absolutely loving it. He loves the track. He's been visited many of these tracks in the past, but he's relishing the opportunity that he's been given this year. I mean, he's not looking down on Formula One in any way. Don't get me wrong here. He's thrilled to bits to have had the career he had in Formula One, but by the same token, he's relishing this opportunity. I was talking to him earlier in the week, and I'd never met him before. Well, I guess I had met him before, perhaps with his dad when he was hanging around as a kid. But in actual fact, I might well have met him at the Formula Ford Festival in 2008, actually, because he was there that year. And I think I remember seeing he and Jan at that event. And I'll tell you what, I have something in common with Kevin Magnussen, because that year in 2008, he drove a one-off home-built Formula Ford car from Denmark called the Aquila in the Formula Ford Festival. And years previously, I drove the Formula Ford Festival in a one-off car, the Lannan, way back in, it was 1980 that was, in fact, a little bit before Kevin was born. But it's nice to be able to have something in common with a Formula One driver, I can tell you that. But no, super guy, super enthusiastic, and he was so impressive last weekend. You know, he's just beaming a smile every time he gets out of the car, and you know, loves the fact that this sort of track, you know, there's consequences. If you run off the road here, you're quite likely to hit a fence or something harder than that. In Formula One, you know, the tracks are so sanitized these days that you know, he doesn't have to. The track limits isn't a problem. Let's put it that way. In Formula One, other than being called for a penalty on it, you're very rarely going to get called for a penalty for track limits here. But if you do abuse the track limits, you're likely to hit something solid. The other thing he's true. Very much enthused about is the fact that tyre degradation isn't a big factor like it has been of course in Formula One. Now he can push the car hard for as long as he's at the wheel of it. He's finding a bit of a breath of fresh air, and indeed Kevin himself I think is a bit of a breath of fresh air. Lovely guy, and running there in second place.
Nice bit of synchronicity there, considering you were there in 8-0 1980 and he was there in 08 2008.
So, yes, true.
There's another comparison, or sort of mirror image, if you like. You're tuned to RS2 IMSA Radio. 11 hours now completed in this year's Rolex 24 of Daytona. It's the 59th edition of this fantastic race, and we're bringing you live coverage from the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. It is time at the end of another race hour, therefore, to bring you a master racing update with Philippe Albuquerque leading the motor race. 366 laps just ticked off by the Portuguese, the man from Coimbra in the north of Portugal, driving the Konica Minolta Acura DPI car 10 ahead of Ross Kilder's Kevin Magnussen for Cadillac, for Chip Ganassi Racing, returning to the prototype class in 2021 with their famous number 01 on the side of their DPI. Simon Pagenaud's third in car 48, just 0.7 of a second off the back of K-Mag for Ally Cadillac Racing, and fourth place is the 31 of Pipa Durrani for Whelan Engineering. The Acura, the second of the Acuras for Meyershank Racing with Kerb Agajanian, is running in fifth for Olivier Pla, and a recovering, sadly, again, 55 Mazda, now three laps down after a difficulty with the rear deck. It bent one of the clips, and the team worked very, very hard to get that reattached, but it's cost Harry Tinknell's Mazda three laps. Giorgio Cernicciotto leads LMP2 for Cetelar Racing and their Dallara LMP2 car, with the 4.2-litre Gibson engine powering it, as it does for all of the LMP2s in the race. Car 47 from, in second place, the number 11 car of Stephen Thomas, and then it's John Ferrano, the Canadian for Tower Motorsport, running in third. So 47, 11 and 8 are the numbers to look out for in LMP2. In GTLM, still the story of a Corvette 1-2, four leading three, Nick Tandy ahead of Jordan Taylor, but only half a second between them. Then Jesse Krohn in the BMW from Team RLL, the M8 car 24 is third, ahead of Jules Gounon's Risi Competizione Ferrari 62, and Bruno Spengler in the 25. The red BMW is fifth. In LMP3, Scott Andrews drives the 74 LMP3 Riley Motorsports Ligier ahead of the Duquesne of Moritz Krantz for Mulner Motorsports America car 6. And in GT Daytona, the top five, probably all five different manufacturers. No, not quite, actually, in this snapshot. 57 is Maro Engel in a Mercedes for Windward Racing. It's another Mercedes for Sun Energy One in second, 75. Then Simon Mann in the AF Corsa Ferrari, number 21. Lars Kern for Pfaff Motorsports is fourth in the number 9 Porsche. And in fifth place, it's the Aston Martin of Heart of Racing Team. That's car number 23. Another hour completed on RS2 IMSA Radio. That's your latest Mazda Racing update.